Jace from The Comic Source. This episode is another interview I did at Phoenix Comic Con. The person I'm talking to in this episode is Heath Corson. He's a writer. He's done a lot of work in the DC animated universe as well as other cartoons. He also was the writer on last year's DC miniseries Bizarro. Really great guy to talk to, really fun. He's a very talented writer. You can tell just by the sheer amount of work that he's done, he's always in demand. So he also tells an amazing story about something that happened to him when he was moving from Chicago to L.A. And it's the way he tells the story. I mean, you can understand why the guy is such a great storyteller. He, you know, the way he tells the story is so funny and engaging and captivating, and it really is a funny story. So I hope you all enjoyed the interview. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, this is Jace from The Comic Source. I'm here with Heath Corson. So Heath, thanks for joining me, first of all.
Of course, Jace, my pleasure.
For those of our listeners who aren't familiar, can you talk a little bit about your current work? What are you writing?
Sure. You might know me from some of my animated DCU movies. I did Justice League War. I did Batman Assault on Arkham. I did Justice League Throne of Atlantis. I did Batman Unlimited, both Monster Mayhem and Animal Instincts. I did Tom and Jerry Spy Quest. I did, which is Tom and Jerry Meet Johnny Quest. I did Scooby-Doo Lego Haunted Hollywood. And I am one of the writers of the new Justice League action cartoon show that will be premiering, probably sometime next year. Also, I'm the writer of the DC miniseries Bizarro, which came out last year, which was fantastic and a ton of fun. And right now I'm writing King's Quest for Dynamite, which is a team up of all your favorite King's Features characters, such as the Phantom, Prince Valiant, Flash Gordon, Mandrake the Magician. And that is a 5-issue miniseries in comic stores now. And I just came off writing for Scream, the TV show, where I just was one of the staff writers for season 2.
I'm tired.
I know.
It's like a lot of work.
It's exhausting, dude. It's a lot of stuff.
But at the same time, I want to give you a big hug because you're talking about some of those DC animated movies, Justice League War, Throne of Atlantis. Those are some of the... Oh, so good. You get the DC Universe.
Oh, man. That means so much.
You get them.
That means a lot that you said that.
Let's talk a little bit. Okay, you said you did Bizarro for DC, which I loved.
Oh, come on.
My daughter's 4. She needs to be just a little bit older so I can share it with her. I'm looking forward to it. Let's talk a little bit about specifically writing for comics versus animation. Can you talk a little bit about the different ways you approach that?
What I will tell you, the thing that was the most surprising to me is the pace. The pace is completely different. I really had to sort of recalibrate myself when writing for pages, because you only have 20 pages.
Right.
And in the beginning, I was like, wait, how many panels do I want on this page? And I didn't connect.
27.
Well,
make them small.
Here's the joke. Being a comic book reader my entire life, I'd always absorbed them, but I never actually thought about it.
Right.
And like, the fewer they are, the faster the pace is.
Right.
The more there are, the slower the pace is. So I was like, okay, try to keep it to 5 or 6, and I'm doing that and doing that. But I crammed so much story into my first draft that the last 3 pages, I was like, panel 12. And my editor was like, no, we're not doing that. Like, I'm not making Gustavo do 15 panels on a page. Like, we're not doing that. And he was like, you know, you could say to be continued and come back. And I was like, oh, that's right. So it was interesting. And then there's little things you take advantage of, like in animation, it's great when a bunch of characters are bantering back and forth. In comic books, it blocks all the art. So I had to really like trim that down. I want to make sure that they're being as succinct as possible. And then finally, one thing I learned is you can't have people nod in comic books,
right.
Where you can have them just nod in animation and it's just a beat.
Right.
Like, it takes 4 panels for someone to be like, yes, I am nodding. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That
was another learning curve I had to do.
What do you like best about each of the mediums?
The thing that's awesome about animation is that I could do a movie like Justice League War, that if you were to do it in live action, it would be $500 million, right?
Right.
Like, we are smashing through buildings. We can do whatever we want. At no point do they ever tell me we don't have the budget to do this. They're always encouraging me, like, go bigger, go louder. Let's see what else we can do. Like, make this as kinetic and big and feel like an event as possible. So that's the thing that I absolutely love with animation. With comic books are magical. I mean, they're tactile. They're the thing I grew up with. So to be able to stand on the shoulders of these amazing artists that came before me and writers is a dream come true. So to get to have a book that has my name on it, it blows my mind. It's just, and also the thing I really like about it is the collaboration with the artist. Like, you are co-storytellers. You know, there's stuff that I'm like, I don't know if this works, but Gustavo's going to be able to sell it better
than
I. He'll pull it off. Like, I could put that on him. So that's been really neat. And also it makes you think in a really specific way. You know, like, what exactly am I seeing on this page? So that was really exciting.
Do you have more work in the print comics coming up?
Well, I have King's Quest right now, and I'm talking to DC about some new opportunities. So nothing I can announce just yet,
okay.
But hopefully coming down the road.
Also, you know, you're on a podcast now, but you host.
I host a podcast
for Nerd. How is that experience? How did you get into that? Doing that?
You know, Ben Blacker is one of my really good friends, and he's been doing the Nerdist Writers Panel for a while. And I think it was just that we wanted to talk to comic book people as well, and people who write genre television, genre movies, genre other stuff. And we were like, well, why don't we do a podcast and ask our friends to come on, and then see if they can give us some insight into stuff. And it's allowed us to meet some just amazing people that I normally wouldn't get a chance to see.
Right.
So that's been really cool.
Right, getting back to your work in animation.
Yes.
I find that, like you were saying, no budget. It's amazing. You can do things you can't do in a live action movie.
Yes.
But at the same time, I feel like, in a way, the creators behind it don't necessarily get the credit that somebody from a director from a live action or a writer from a live action.
That's interesting. And it's
because it's, people think cartoon. It's not
right.
It artistically, it doesn't count as much, so to
uh-huh.
speak. Have you found that to be the case at all?
A little bit. I mean, I've been very, very lucky to be able to play in the DCU and play with these animated characters and to do as much work as I have been able to do with them. So creatively, it's been incredibly fulfilling. And then to be at a show like this where you see all these people that have seen the work, like, and they're like, oh yeah, Assault on Arkham, that was rad. Like, that's a really neat, special thing. Like, it's really cool for me. I don't feel like, look, I'm a guy who thinks that putting good work out into the world is its own reward.
Okay.
It will always get you to the next thing. I will say I've been shocked that the Bizarro book has opened up like a ton of doors for me, and that's been really exciting. And like, the circulation, the numbers were not immense numbers, but it's just like having your name on a comic book all of a sudden was a big deal.
Right.
So it was a really, really awesome thing.
So enjoy your anonymity then, in a way, right?
Because my animated anonymity has said that a couple times fast.
There you go. I mean, because I remember, for instance, 2011 San Diego Comic Con when they first announced New 52. Scott Snyder would walk around the DC booth like no big deal.
Right.
If he tried to do that,
oh yeah,
now he gets mobbed.
He's mobbed.
He gets mobbed. So nobody gets into this to comics to be rich and famous.
Right.
If so, you're in the wrong industry.
That's right.
So from what you're saying, it's like, put good work out. That's what matters to you. It's not necessarily the recognition or...
You know, I want people to enjoy what I'm doing.
Right.
And I want them to have a good time. And really, I want to connect with the audience. So that's awesome. I mean, that's its own reward for me.
Right.
You know,
you probably have people walking by this weekend who love the movies you've done and don't even put the two together.
Sometimes, yeah. But you know, like, somebody just said, oh my gosh, I just watched these. They were at a panel and I mentioned that I had written these, and they were like, I just watched these the last two nights. Like, I had no idea that you were that guy who wrote that, and oh my gosh, they were so much fun and they're so cool. That's great. That's great to hear. And to be able to contribute to that canon with names like Jim Krieg and Alan Burnett and Dwayne McDuffie and just great, amazing people working. Paul Dini.
Yeah, not just legends and talents, but good people.
Yeah. Yeah. And legends.
Yes, and legends.
And legends.
Not to discount their work, but great, great people. So, I do have to ask, because I hear it's a great story.
Go, ask
Moving
me.
To L.A., everything's stolen. What? Let's hear, what's the story?
So here's what happened. I'll give you the abbreviated story, because the whole story is like, it's like a 45-minute performance.
But okay.
Basically, I was packing up to move to L.A. I had done a stage version of a stage adaptation of a comic called Scary Godmother, which was written by Jill Thompson.
All right.
I approached Jill about doing a stage version, and she said yes, and so Jill and I adapted her book to the stage. I directed it. Jill designed it so it looked like you were stepping into her watercolor world, which was unbelievable. It was like a great experience. Off of that, Mainframe Entertainment, that owned the rights to do the animation for Scary Godmother, contacted me and said, look, we have already done two scripts for this Halloween special, and your show is better than both of those.
Nice.
So they were like, we want to hire you and Jill to write the script and also do a rewrite on it. And we were like, great. So we rewrote it. We wrote the script and then did a rewrite pass on it, and it airs every year on Cartoon Network as Scary Godmother's Halloween Spooktacular. Side note, the head of Mainframe Entertainment at this time, which was 2003-2004, do you know who it was? A little guy named Dan DiDio. Hilarious, right? Yeah. I reminded Dan of this at a panel in San Diego last year. So off of that, I was like, I'm going to go move to L.A. Like, I'm ready. I sold this big thing. I'm moving to L.A.
Where were you living at the time?
I was living in Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. Okay. And so I've been in Chicago for years and years and years.
Big Cubs fan?
Big Cubs fan. Cubs fan. Okay. I'm North Side. So I pack up everything, and I find this. This is 2003, mind you. I find this guy in online, and they say, we'll move you for $2,000. And I was like, great. Well, they come in, they look at your stuff, they look, walk around, and they're like, yeah, it'll be $2,000, $1,000 up top, and $1,000 down the road. And I was like, great. So you give them $1,000, they pack up everything, and they put it on the truck, and they say, okay, we'll see you in California. I was like, great. So then I move to California, I find a place, they call, and they say, hey, we weighed all your stuff. It's not $1,000, it's $4,000. And I go, well, I don't have $4,000. And there's a long pause, and they say, yeah, well, we have your stuff. What?
Okay, so they called you up. They said, well, we have your stuff.
We have your stuff. So this starts 6 months of negotiation. I am in California. I have bought a bed, and I have my laptop, and I've rented an apartment, and that's all I have. That's it. So
and some clothes.
And I'm talking to these people, and they were like, and I was like, look, I don't have $4,000. And then they were like, well, maybe we could do it for $3,700. And we would go back and forth with like a week in between, because they would dodge my calls. Now, this is 2003, so there's literally no one to call, because Clinton had done away with the TSA, which was the Trans State Authority at the time. So those were the people that would do cross-country moves. So the only people I could call were the FBI. And in 2003, the FBI had a lot more to do than worry about.
Yeah, they didn't give a shit about you.
No. So finally, I found out, I said, well, what did you guys do with my stuff? And they said, well, we put it in a storage locker in Van Nuys. So I was like, well, let me look up how many public storages there were in Van Nuys, and I found it. And I went to them, and I told them what happened, and they said, well, we can't do anything because it's illegal, but what we'll do is we'll give you a copy of the contract, and you'll have to go sue these guys. But do it fast, because they're going to stop payment on this locker, and the minute that happens, after 30 days, you're on storage wars. And I was like, ugh. So I go to the lawyer with this contract, and the lawyer's looking at it, and he's like, well, what do you know the locker number? And I was like, locker number's not on here. And I'm looking at it, and I was like, oh, wait, up here it says locker number. And then under it, it says gate code. And the lawyer says, I can't tell you to do anything illegal, but if it were me, I'd go get your stuff. So in the dead of night, I go with a friend who had a Pontiac Firebird. We took the license plate off her car, because this is a felony. We drive in the dead of night. I mean, there's armed guards, there's cameras. I go to the Ace Hardware in Studio City where they will let you rent bolt cutters by the hour. Like, they'll let you rent them. And I was like, and they're like, well, you're not going to do anything bad with this. And I was like, oh, no,
of course not.
I was like, who rents bolt cutters? Like, I was prepared to buy them. They sell me bolt cutters. Or they rent me bolt cutters. We drive in. We watch a guard go around the corner. I lean out of the car. We open up the door. I like, so the camera can't see my face. We took those license plates off. I clip the lock. I open it just enough to shine a flashlight in. Yes, my stuff's in there. I close it. I put a new lock on it. We drive away. The next day, I call movers and I say, I need you to clear out this locker. Here's the combination. They go in. They clear it out. I'm across the street at the Shell station with binoculars, watching them do it. So they have complete plausible deniability. They have no idea that they're doing something wrong.
Right.
They pull it all out, deliver it to me, and then the guy's like, are you going to pay me or what? And I said, go F yourself.
Never gave him a cent.
That's where I got, well, I got $1,000.
Oh, because you paid the $1,000
up front. I paid the $1,000 up front, and that's how he got,
that's how I moved
to L.A.
That is awesome. I'm waiting for the motion picture, Heath.
Right? isn't that a good movie? Wouldn't that be a great movie?
Yeah, that would be a great movie.
Yeah. So that's how that happened.
That is cool. You're right. That is a great story.
It's a great story.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
Well, for those of our listeners that want to follow along with your work, what's the best way, social media?
Best way is to follow me on Twitter at Heath Corson, and I talk about everything I could talk about at the time. Ask me anything you want. Let me know what you think of the work, and thanks so much for doing this, Jason.
Hey, man. I appreciate you being on the show.
Nice meeting you.